G'day. G'day, mate. My name is DJ and I'm an alcoholic. To the newcomers, I want to say welcome. We've been waiting for you. And to all the committee, I would like to say thank you. I would like to thank Nick for picking me up at the airport. I would like to thank Belinda for being there and being our tour guide yesterday. I want to thank Ash. I want to thank Cam. I want to thank everybody who's made my trip and my wife's trip extremely comfortable for being here. And this is a big deal. If you set these chairs up, thank you. If you set these microphones up, I want to say thank you. If you set those drinks up, if you had the tables and everything, I want to say thank you, because this is what we do. This is part of having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps. This is a big deal for me to be in Australia. So Melbourne, thank you. I appreciate that. We flew out. We landed yesterday. And the funny thing about it is they had this common economy, right? But let me tell you how God works. On the 16-hour flight, they upgraded us to business. They gave us PJs and everything, you know. So we had a very, very comfortable flight. And this is a big deal. And I do have to say, me and my wife, as we were walking around, you guys are beautiful. You people are beautiful out here in Australia. It's like, wow. You guys are just gorgeous looking people out here. I had to say that. But my sobriety date is July 3rd, 2005. July this year, if I keep doing what I've been doing for the last so many years, I'll have 8 years in July, which is, in the United States, it's our Independence Day. It's 4th of July. So my Independence Day was a day before Independence Day. So I was liberated from this disease, or like we say, this dis-ease of the mind, body, and soul. The man you see in front of you now is a totally different man. Totally different man from what I used to be like. If it wasn't for you people in these rooms that wanted me to live a totally, totally different life, I would not be here now. I wouldn't have came. And I want to say to newcomers, this is very, very important. It's very, very important to have a commitment at a meeting. To newcomers, I want to say it's very, very important to have a sponsor who does the work. To newcomers, I want to say that it's very, very important to have and to develop a strong desire to serve other people. This is what keeps us sober. A good sponsor, commitments, and a desire to serve other people. And that's basic. That's basic recovery right there. Because in recovery, we have sobriety. We have recovery. I just don't want to be sober. I don't want to be sober, because if I'm sober, I'm that same DJ that you do not want to know. But when I do my recovery work coupled with my sobriety, I'm the DJ who's going to help you. My life is totally different. I like to call it abnormal from what it used to be like. You see, because in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, there is a solution. For the last 25, 27 years, I never knew that there was a solution to this disease, to my disease, because every time I put that first one in me, something happens. My perception changes. The world is totally different. You are against me and I am a victim. See, when you read these books, not just the big book and the 12 and 12, but when you look through the history of Alcoholics Anonymous, of how these two men were gifted with this solution, they did a lot of work, as the doctor was saying earlier, and thank you for that. They did a lot of work. They talked to a lot of different people. You know, one of the world-renowned therapists called, he was like the victim. You were a victim. But another therapist, he said, it's a spiritual normality. It's something spiritually wrong with us. Because I like to say we have dense, deeply ingrained negative thoughts and feelings. Remember that phrase, dense. It's like when you, like your car, you had that dent on the side. It's abnormal, right? So we got to do the work and take it to a body shop to get that dent pulled out and to restore that car to its natural state. And that's what these rooms do. These rooms restore us back to our natural state. So deeply ingrained negative thoughts. I suffered from deeply ingrained negative thoughts. And I never knew that there was a solution to my deeply ingrained negative thoughts until you guys came and carried this message to me when I was suffering. You see, in the big book, what it says that there is a solution. It says that almost none of us, please listen, almost none of us like the self-searching, the leveling of our pride, the confessions of our shortcomings, which this process requires to be successful. But we see that it really works in others. You see, but when we are approached by those in whom the problem had been solved, there was nothing left for us to do but to pick up the simple kit of spiritual tools that we lay at your feet. And therefore, once we pick up those tools that are laid at our feet, we find nothing but heaven. We are rocketing into the fourth dimension of existence like we not had even dreamed. How powerful is that? Almost none of us like the self-searching. Who wants to do some self-searching? You know? Who wants to level their pride? Who wants to tell you my confessions and my shortcomings? I'm shady. I'm grimy. I don't want to say that. But in order for me to recover, these are the things I have to do. You see, me, I'm from Los Angeles, California. I grew up with two sisters and a mother. I never knew my real father. I looked for love all the time. I looked for love in all the wrong places. In too many places. So therefore, when I was a young boy, growing up where I grew up, which is a gang neighborhood, my homeboys, they loved me. My homeboys, they loved me. My gang, they loved me. They were the family I never had. They accepted me for all of my faults. I was rewarded for violence and ridiculed for kindness. It's backwards. But it worked. This is something that I looked for my entire life. My older homeboys, they became my father figures. They taught me things that a child should not know. Too young to know these kind of things. I never lived. I only survived. And from there, what happened from there was they taught me things that, like I said, a child should not know. And after that, I did pretty good. I sold narcotics for a living. And I thought this was my way out. I thought that if I have the money, the property, and prestige, you would like me. You would accept me because I have things. But I still didn't love myself. I started drinking at a very young age. See, back then, the funny thing about it is, I'm 41 years old. I've never been to a liquor store and bought a beer. I've never bought a legal beer. Let me rephrase that. I've never bought a legal beer. It was always given to me. So back then, you know, we were drinking, you know, Mad Dog 2020, you know, Super Sock on the gin, Old English 40 ounces, and we were gangbanging. You know, there was no tomorrow. I mean, it was lawless and reckless. And that's how our life, that's how my life was. But as I was growing up in my hood, what happened was that my drinking progressed. Every time I put that first one in me, the world looked different. My perception changed. My deeply ingrained negative thoughts were pushed to the back burner. I was okay. My solution was in that bottle. My solution was in that bottle. But from there, I started to progress. But I was also spinning down the rabbit hole. I like to tell the guys I work with is that it's like the Wizard of Oz on that yellow brick road. We have those lions and tigers and bears, you know, that are trying to get you off that yellow brick road. And they got me. The ones that brought me into this way of life, into the streets, into the hustling, into the gangbanging, into the drug dealing, into the drinking, into manipulation, into the violence. These were the same men that turned me in. And they got arrested by federal agents. I gave them about 8 pounds of cocaine to sell for me. And from there, they got arrested by the feds. Federal government, federal agents. And this was February 6th, 1990. My life changed in one day. Just like that, my life changed. And it was February 6th, 1990. I was inebriated once again because I stayed inebriated most of my youth. And I was 19 years old. And one day, they got arrested. And they told that DJ is the one you want. Make a long story short, I was arrested and convicted and given a 20-year prison sentence. I was 19 years old, newcomers. I was 19. I did 17 years. Got out November 1st, 2006. I grew up in prison. I became a man in prison. The judicial system reared me. So the man you see in front of you now is a product of you. I'm a product of you. I shook everything. I had to change everything. Not just something. I changed everything about me. And I'm totally grateful. And I will tell you how I got sober. Because when you're 19 years old, you got a 20-year prison sentence, and it's 1990, and they say, Mr. DJ, you're not going to go home until November 1st, 2006. That's if you make it. I could not see tomorrow. So what happened was my alcoholism progressed. I was doing everything I was doing on the streets except driving a car. It's pretty wild. I was doing everything because I'm connected. You know, all my homeboys was there. You know, we got 400 homeboys in the yard. We running things. As soon as you hit the yard, the first thing they give you is a big old knife. They give you some tobacco to roll up. And they give you a gallon of wine. And my first night, I got loaded. And a correctional officer asked me a question. And you can't tell me nothing. What? Pull your pants up. What? I spent my first prison thing in the hole, you know, and but it progressed. So after that was I continued to drink. See, newcomers, I got transferred to 13 different federal prisons in the United States. I got kicked out of 10 of them. You know, how does one get kicked out of a prison? You know, how you get kicked out of a prison, man? You know. 3 good transfers, 10 disciplinary transfers, because every time I put that first one in me, it's like, man, I'm self-will run the ride. You can't tell DJ nothing. I run the world, you know. but this is what happens to me. I get loaded, I put that first one in me, and everything's out the window, you know. See, now, you know, to the Al-Anon people, you know, this is a big deal, because I did not realize that you were victims. I didn't know my family was victims. I did not know it. It's me. I'm the victim. I'm the one in prison. I'm the one that got a 20-year prison sentence that I got to do a day at a time. You know what I'm saying? So when I got out, I had to change everything. I apologized to my entire family. I apologized to my neighborhood. You know, but I would tell you all about that. I made amends. And making amends, newcomers, is not saying sorry and doing it again. Making amends is saying sorry and never doing it again. You know, that's amends right there. So make a long story short, what happened to me was I kept getting transferred. It wasn't always me, because every time I put that first one in me, you know, I'm hanging out in the yard with the homies, you know, and some politicking going on, some beefing going on, or whatever's happening, you know, why they always coming to get me? Every time what happens, they're always coming to get me. You know, it wasn't me, it was them. Well, you know, they the one that did, not me. I don't even know them people, but they, you know, but that's what happens, you know. I don't know how to handle that. I'm limitless. I'm limitless when I drink. You know. And this was in 1994 when I was in Atlanta. They have like they call it a Supermax. And I'm in the day room, and I got my homeboy. He's sitting next to me, and his name is Maniac, you know. Yeah, good name for him too. His name is Maniac, and we're in the day room, and we're sitting there watching videos and stuff, and he has a little styrofoam cup. See, we used to make this stuff. And he has a little styrofoam cup, and he just sips on it. I don't know about sipping. What's a sip? This is not a wine tasting. We don't taste it and shake it around and look at the color or anything like that. And I drank that stuff to get the effect, because my deeply ingrained negative thoughts, I can't live in the now. I got to get low and I got to forget. And, you know, this is what I have to do. So I'm like, hey, homie, why are you sipping on that, dog? He was like, man, I'm just trying to get a buzz. I'm on my third cup already. That was the first time in my entire life that I figured that I drink different from my fellows. But the word is like, I drink different from my homeboys. See, this is what the big book says. That was my first glimpse that I drink different from my fellows. See, I had 14 years left. Maniac had life in 30. He's never getting out. But he's drinking like there. But I'm drinking like there's no tomorrow. And that, with that right there, when he said, I'm just trying to get a buzz, I realized that I'm different. When I drink, something happens to me. I have to drink it all. But did that stop me? No. Didn't stop me. No, it didn't stop me. And so a lot of things has happened that caused me to be a victim. And it's all of my own making. So, you know, a lot of prison time. And this one particular time, I had they put me in solitary confinement. I had to do a year in an 8x6 room. I'm not a big man, but I can touch both walls like this with my hands. And I can walk the length of my prison cell in 4 steps. And this is where I lived for a year. This is where my alcoholism takes me. And from there, what happened was, it was like something happened in that room. Something happened, which I did not know. Something was happening. I had the first glimpse that this is not the life I'm supposed to be living. And after that, I get out. Now look at the similarities. Now I want you to listen to the similarities. I get out and say, I'm not going to drink anymore. But the first thing, first sign of trouble, what happened is I put that first one in me. I say, I'm just going to drink for the weekend. I'm going to drink Monday, Wednesday, Friday. I'm going to drink just for this month. Why? I don't get out to 2006. Why? This year. I'm going to quit on New Year's. I'm in the penitentiary saying this kind of stuff. You know, convincing myself, trying to trick myself, do the Jedi mind trick, you know, that I'm going to do this. And all of a sudden, another 10 years pass. I look in the mirror, I got gray in my beard. And I'm growing up and nothing's changed. Like the doctor said, nothing changes, nothing changes. But is it me? No, it's not me. It's society, it's God, it's the people, it's the places, it's the circumstances, things. You know? It's not me, it's never me. So some more time had passed, and what happened after that, it turns out to be 2005. It was July 2nd. It was after the 4 p.m. count. I'm still in prison. And what happens is after 4 o'clock count, they release the unit so you can go watch TV and stuff like that. So what I do is I say, I was doing drugs too. So I did what I did, and I sat in the day room. I got my gallon of wine with me, and I'm taking it back. You know, at this time, I was 210 pounds. I had a long braid right here in my beard, which was really, really cool looking at the time, you know. I used to have braids in my hair, and I was like real 210 pounds. But I had the mentality of a mistreated pit bull, you know, tied in the backyard to a tree, just wanting somebody just to pet me. You know, that's how I feel. I feel like a mistreated pit bull. You know, I'm friendly, but just somebody just show me some love. That's what I want. I want somebody to show me some love. That's the mentality that I had. So at this particular day, which is July 2nd, 2005, I'm in the day room, and all of a sudden everything went black. I don't know if you guys know about that. I don't know if you guys know about blackouts. Anybody know about blackouts? Okay, I'll make sure I'm in the right place now. Okay. So what happened was, I'm in a nod at the 4 o'clock count. I've been in prison 16 years. I haven't accomplished anything but getting loaded and getting transferred and doing a lot of special housing time. And what happened from there is one of my homeboys was like, "Hey, Ghost, wake up, homie, wake up. Wake up, homie." He's tapping me on my shoulder saying, "Wake up." I can hear him, but I cannot respond to him. And my other homeboy said, "Man, that dude been like that ever since I've known him. That hurt. That dude has been like that ever since I've known him." Please listen to the similarities. Our families have always told the same thing. "Look at you, man. You've always been like that. Look at you. You've always been like that since I've known you. You ain't gonna change." But I'm in the nod, and they say, "Man, this dude been like that ever since I've known him." And every cell of my body heard it. I felt it, but I could not respond to it. And they were right. I've been like this ever since I picked the first one up. Nothing's changed. My deeply ingrained negative thoughts kept me from growing. Didn't know what to do. Didn't know there was a solution to this problem, to this disease that I had. And so at that night, I woke up in my cell. And I looked at my clock, and it was 3:43 a.m. in the morning. And I looked up and said, "God, I have 10 months left before I go home. I do not know what to do, and I am scared." So you got to understand is that I never believed in God. Because why? I grew up poor. I grew up without a father. You know, I've been betrayed by family members. You know, my homeboys betrayed me. They put me in prison for all my, damn near half my life. You know, where was God? But I have to say, when you're by yourself and you get extremely humble, I knew there was something there, but just didn't know how to communicate with him. Didn't know how to communicate right from right here. You know, I can say the defendant's prayer. You know, the defendant's prayer, when you stand up and say, "God, please don't let these people find me guilty. You know, I won't do it again." I swear I won't, you know. But at this time, I said, at 3:43 a.m., I said, God, I have 10 months left. I do not know what to do, and I'm scared. I do not know what to do. It got really quiet. It got extremely quiet, and something happened. Something happened in that room. Something happened in that day room. Something happened when my homeboy said, that dude's been like that since I've known him. Something happened when everybody in that day room started laughing. Something happened when my cell was completely quiet, and at 3:43 a.m. I spoke with God. Something happened. I spoke from right here. I'm an alcoholic. I don't know anything. The only thing I know how to do is gangbang, sell dope, manipulate people, acts of violence, because that's what you reward me for the damage that I can do. I don't care about you. I don't care about myself. So do you think I care about anybody else? No, I don't. But my heart says there's something better for me there. But I never knew there was a solution, you know. And like I said in the beginning, you know, the self-searching, the leveling of pride and confession of our shortcomings. So the next morning I went outside to go smoke a cigarette. And I'm looking across the yard as I'm smoking a cigarette. And I'm blowing smoke. And just looking around and saying, I grew up in here. Spent all of my 20s and half of my 30s in this environment. Blowing a cigarette. And I'm looking to my right. And I see these people walking. You know, they got inmates, convicts walking around. But I see these people in street clothes walking. And there was a woman with them. And she was carrying a pink box. And I'm looking. And I'm saying, man, it might be donuts in that box. When you go to the donut shop, what they get you in the pink box, right? I had a donut in 16 years. So I'm looking at her and saying, man, that might be donuts in that box. You know, but I didn't know that they were you. I didn't know that they were alcoholics. I thought they were some Christians, some Jehovah's Witnesses or somebody, you know, coming to, you know, preach this religious stuff to people, you know. But me, you know what I say? I say a couple of hallelujahs, a few amens, a couple of praise the Lord to give me a donut. Yeah. So I walked up, I put my cigarette out, and I walked over there, and I followed them, and I peeked through the window, and her name is Liz. I said, she motioned me and said, come on in. And I said, what's this? She said, this is Alcoholics Anonymous. I said, okay. And I did an about face and walked away. And she said, she came out in the hallway, opened the door and said, would you like a donut, young man? I looked in the box and said, yes, ma'am. Attraction rather than promotion. I got sober for a donut. A donut. I work cheap, don't I? So after that, now you got to understand now. Now here it comes now. Here it comes. Here comes a solution from a 70-year-old white woman. She was 70-year-old and she was white. I'm black and I'm a gang member. She's a grandmother, I'm a gang member. What we have in common? Absolutely nothing. Nothing. We got nothing in common. A woman, 70 years old. What we got in common? We can walk right past each other on the streets and not say nothing to each other. See, but in the program of recovery, in this big book that we have, it says that we are people who wouldn't normally mix. She said the most profound words I've ever heard. I've read the Bible several times. I've read the Quran several times. But this woman said four sentences that shook me to my very core. She said, God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change and the courage to change the things I can and the wisdom to know the difference. Where is this coming from? Where is this coming from? That woman, that 70-year-old white woman, that grandmother, is telling a 36-year-old gang member. She says, when I put that first one in me, my husband's on the back burner. When I put that first drink in me, my kids are on the back burner. When I put that first one in me, my job is on the back burner. She finds herself in places that she should not be when she puts that first one in her. She does not know how to live life when she puts that first one in her. She said her perception changes when she puts that first one in her. The life, everything looks different. She's a victim. And that affected me. Blew me away. I started crying. How does she know? She's 70. She's a grandmother. How does she know how I feel inside? But she knew, so it had to be valid. I left that meeting shook up like a paradise. Something happened in that day room. Something happened in my cell. And something happened in the most important meeting I've ever been in, when these people from H&I, which is hospitals and institutions, these people who are in recovery, who are you right here, who took time out of their busy day to go carry a message of change, and that there's a solution to these men who are in prison, who are suffering. Thank you. You guys did that. So if you take the time, if you're an alcoholic, be a service to someone. Go inside these prisons and carry this message. You can go for 10, 15 years. You might go for the first time, and you're going to affect somebody. And if you do this, and you go to a meeting, and all of a sudden, they'd be like, hey, how you doing? Remember me? You came inside the prison, and you know, and you, thank you. Somebody's waiting to hear your story. Like I said, from the actual prisons or the prisons of your own making. If you haven't been to prison, you've been in a prison of your own making. And somebody's waiting to hear your story. Now, you get to understand that I'm a gang member, you know, I was a former gang member. And I got like, you know, 400 homeboys in the yard, you know, and I've done so much dirt in the penitentiary setting. People know my name. They used to call me Casper the Ghost because of my light skin. And all of a sudden, something happened in one day. Something happened. Now, on the bleachers, when you walk a track in the penitentiary, they have like these bleachers right here, these stone bleachers, right? And see like six guys reading this thing, reading this big book. And they're drinking coffee and they're smoking cigarettes. But I'm thinking that they're religious people, because in the penitentiary, there's only two things you're going to keep it. You're going to turn Muslim, you're going to turn Christian. You know, you're going to get religious, right? And the third one, you're going to keep a gangster. That's all I know. Number three, I keep a gangster. That's all I know. It's my life. I'm a gangster. Gangster as well. I consider myself a gangster. So walking the track, I see these off-brands. You know, that's what we call them. People are unaffiliated, we call them off-brands, you know. So I'm sitting there watching them on the bleachers, you know, reading this big book. And they're talking about there is a solution. And these are the same guys that were in that room. The first meeting I went to, when she gave me a donut. And I put two and two together. In the rooms right here on the bleachers, they're going through the steps. They're reading the big book. And what I got to do, I started hanging out with these men. Because why? I had to change everything. One day, you guys said something. Made me change my whole entire life because you came in. You changed my whole life. You understand? So therefore, what I do is, I gotta give my knives back. Here, take these. I got these drugs. Here, take these. Take this alcohol. I had to take all the women off my visiting list because I didn't care about you. Only thing I want you to do is come inside there with them balloons of that contraband. Do I care if you got kids? No, I'm selfish, self-seeking, and self-centered. If you bring it to me. So I took them all off my visiting list. You know, so I started hanging with those off-brands on the bleachers, drinking coffee, smoking cigarettes, and reading the big book. And what does this look like when the homeboy Ghost is on the bleachers with these off-brands? You know, there's a man who saved my life. His name was Harley. Because you're on a pink cloud for so many days. I'm walking down the hallway and I realize, just cunning, baffling, and powerful. I'm walking down the hallway and I say, man, I'm gonna get loaded right now. Give me 2 gallons. And I got my 2 gallons and I'm walking down the hallway now, and Harley, he sees me. I got that look on my face. He said, what's going on, man? I said, oh, nothing, man. You know, just getting ready to go chill, you know. I'm going to go over the steps later on, you know. You know. And he's like, yeah. He knew what was going on. I had the look on my face. Newcomers. I had the look on my face. And he says, man, let me tell you what happened to me. He talked to me for almost an hour in the hallway. I got 2 gallons of wine sitting right here, and Harley talked to me for almost an hour. He talked about him and why that there's no reason for him to take a drink. And there's no reason for you to take a drink either. So if you really want to stay sober, just go pour that down the drain. And I went to the bathroom and poured it down the drain. And Harley Harmon said, here, grab my hands. I grabbed his hands. He said, my creator, I'm now willing that you should have all of me, the good and the bad. I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. Grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. Never heard that before. It's one of the prayers in the program. I feel he gave me a story. See, newcomers, that's the important thing. There's no greater satisfaction than working with a newcomer. Of, you know, sharing your story, identifying, you know. He got me out of my head by listening to his story. So we walked on the track, and he said, man, you ever did some meditation? I said, no, not really. He says, let's go meditate. So we went on the yard right now. You got to understand who I think I am. I got homies on this yard and they're watching me. We started doing yoga. Some stuff I've never even heard of before. You know, I see it on TV, you know. We're on the yard, come on, you got to do the warrior pose, man. Come on, like this. I'm with a warrior pose and the tree pose and all that stuff and Kundalini yoga, breath of fire. And my homeboy's like, man, this dude's not coming inside the chow hall no more. He's hanging with the off brands way on the other side of the chow hall. He's not going to the day room anymore. He's not drinking. He's not making knives anymore. He's not selling drugs anymore. He's not drinking anymore. He's not doing anything. But he's with them off brands on the bleachers doing, reading his big book on the yard, doing the warrior pose. What has happened? You know what? He done lost his damn mind. He been in prison too long. So I'm upstairs reading my book called How It Works, chapter called How It Works. And one of my homeboys said, hey, Ghost. I used to have a really, really bad attitude. When you tell me something that pisses me off, then I would, you know, lash out, right? And so he says, hey, Ghost, hey, homie, you know, I gotta tell you something, dog. I'm like, what's up, homie? He said, you know, the homies are talking about you right now. I said, is that right? I said, what they say? They're saying you lost it. I guess it would look like I lost it. I've been in prison 16 and a half years now. I'm doing the warrior pose in the yard. I'm hanging with these all-grands on the bleachers, reading this book. I don't go on visits anymore. It would look like I've lost it. You know what I told him? I said, no, dog, I found it. I finally found it. And said, something's different about you. Something's different. I hope you keep it. Now it's time for me to come home. I got two people to call. I got hospitals, institutions, and I got my mama, who never understood me, who never understood what I do, So I got on the phone, and I called Liz. I said, hey Liz, I'm out, they let me out, could you guys come get me? I'm out of prison 1 hour. I had a minivan with these strange looking people. Come on, come on in. And they took me to a meeting my first hour out of prison. Yeah. I'm glad he's excited. Yeah. So they took me to a meeting my first hour out of prison. And here I am. 36 years old, looking at all these pretty ass women, and I want a relationship right now. Right now. So I'm out there smoking a cigarette, and I see these pretty women sitting in front of the meeting house, smoking cigarettes, drinking coffee, and I don't know what to say to you. I don't know how to say hello. I ain't got no social skills. What am I supposed to say to a pretty woman? Hey, I like what you done with your hair. You know? I don't know what to say. So I'm just sitting there acting like I'm important or something, you know, and Liz come outside and save me from being totally embarrassed. And she said, you're going to lead the meeting. And I led the meeting and said, hello, my name is DJ and I'm an alcoholic. And they welcomed me. I said, I just got out of prison about 40 minutes ago. I'm just 17 years, and I'm looking for a sponsor. And I remember this man who came in. His name is Russell S. He is my sponsor, and he was my best man at my wedding. I got married September 29th to my beautiful wife right there, you know. And he told me, he said, if you're willing to do everything, if you're willing to do the work, I will take you through these steps. But you have to be willing to change everything. And I said, I'm willing. He said, first thing you're going to do is I need you to pull your pants up. You know? He said it with love and kindness, though, you know. And he said, I need you to cut that braid out your face. It don't look cool. You know. And he said, from there then we'll start working. Call me every day for 7 days. So I said, okay. Now I got this man who is willing to take me through these steps and want me to live a different life. What does he want from me? Absolutely nothing. He doesn't want nothing from me. He doesn't want me to have what he has. So basically what I started doing was I started to mimic him. Never wore a suit and tie before until I started mimicking him. We went through the steps. We went through everything. You know, he took me to a bunch of men's meetings. Because why? I said, what about them pretty women? You know, I don't want to be in a relationship. He said, you do not know how to have a relationship with yourself. So how are you going to have a relationship with one of these women? He said, no relationships for the first year. And I said, why? He said, because when you're in a relationship with a woman, you do not know how to control your feelings. We're going to work on emotions and your feelings for your first year. And I said, man, that ain't cool. And he looked at me, my sponsor's about this tall, and he looked at me and said, did I ask to sponsor you? And I said, no. No, he didn't. I said, okay, I'll take your advice. So we start going through the steps, and we come to the God concept. Now, the God concept, I really haven't touched on that since I was in my cell, because back on Easter of 1982, at this church in Compton, it's a Pentecostal church, and they get really, really electrical in the church. I was 12 years old at the time, and that was the last time I went to church, because again, I felt like I'm defective, something's wrong with me. So it's like a church like this, right? And they have a walkway right here. So this particular time, there was a visiting pastor that was coming in that was blessing all of the children. So you walk up to the podium, you put your hands like this, and he'll put his hands around your head, and he'll say some words, and he'll push you down, and you'll fall out, right? So everybody was doing it. Everybody go up there, put their hands up, he bless them, they'll fall down. My sisters even did it, and they fell. So here come my turn. So I walk up there, he puts his hands on my head and says, he says something to me, and he pushes me back, and I go like this. Okay. He does it again. He puts his hands on my forehead, and he says something in my ear, and he pushes me back, and I go like this. And I'm like, I didn't fall. What happened was, that just validated everything that I'd ever thought. God not there for me, because I didn't feel what all those people before me felt. Right? So he does it again. And he gets real close to me. And he gets in my ear and says, just fall. I ain't never went back to church again. So I'm looking. My mother's sitting right there in the first row, and she looked at me and said, boy, you better fall. So I'm like, wow. I've never been in church again. So here we go with the God concept. I never knew that we can have a God of our own understanding. Not how my mother understands it. Not how my grandmother understands it. How I understand it. God is my friend, my higher power. God works through you guys. When I was suffering, God used you guys to come inside that prison from somebody that I wouldn't even imagine who knew how I felt. And God worked with this woman named Liz and to tell me her life story, and she carried a message. That's the God of my understanding. God works through us. So we went through all that right there. I had a parole officer who had me taking parenting classes. But I don't have any kids. You know? And I said, okay. He said, is there anything you want to say? And I said, there's only one thing I need to say. He said, what is that? And I said, I am here only to clear up the records of my past. I'm just here to clear up the records of my past. Change the whole frequency. Change the whole frequency. Now, my thing is now, is I got to be a hummingbird. You know, a hummingbird goes to flower, to trying to find that sweet honey, that nectar. Well, you got a 37, now I'm 37 now. I got a 37-year-old man with no work experience, with a high school education. I got to go find a job. I did everything under the sun. I did everything. I twirled Verizon wireless signs. I dug ditches. If you called me and said, man, I'll go, you know, where's Ash? I'll go to Bread and Roses and say, man, I need a job for the weekend. Man, I'll clean your garage. And the men from the room said, my garage? Yeah, I'll give you $100 for cleaning my garage. I'll go clean your garage. I did everything. What I was doing was, but my higher power was preparing me to do something different. My past had become my greatest asset. I continued to work with my sponsor. You know, my life was in a maze. Now I live an amazing life. My life is totally abnormal from what it used to be like. It's because of you guys. I am a product of you. You guys giving me this life as I live now. If it wasn't for you, I wouldn't be here right now. If it wasn't for you going to those prisons, I wouldn't be here right now. If it wasn't for you men teaching me how to be a man, I wouldn't be here right now. If it wasn't for you women teaching me how to treat a woman, I wouldn't be married right now. I am here because of you. In this program. So what happened is, you know, my life took a turn. I started doing things that I never really imagined doing. I was at a meeting one time, and this couple, they were looking at me. They were looking at me, and I'm like, and then they approached me. He said, "You think you can play a convict?" I almost spit my juice out. And I said, "Yeah, I think so. I think so." They said, "Well, we work on this television show, and we like your look. Here's our card. Give us a number." I was on that TV show for 3 years. I was the best inmate on the show. You know? And then I started doing this. And then I started doing this. And I got a chance to travel to different parts of the world. I got a chance to dream out loud. Because of you. Never imagined this. How can I be useful? How can my life become useful? I did not know it. You guys gave me the basic tools and said, be active in your own rescue. Don't talk yourself out of it. Talk yourself into it, DJ. Because when life gets good, my pockets start getting fat. I'm too busy to go to a meeting. I ain't got time right now. No matter what, my priority is my recovery. Me and my wife talk about this a lot. And I tell my wife, my recovery is before you. You're second. And I hope I am second on her list. You know, this is how important this is, because if it wasn't for my recovery, I wouldn't have this. You know, so I got a chance to do certain things, you know, and it's totally, totally amazing. You know, I was telling Nick the other day that I'm writing my next book right now, and this is going to be in it. You know, it's pretty amazing that I get a chance to do this certain things like this. I'm really grateful, you know, and I hope that you guys heard something tonight that will convince you to say, I am one of you, as the big book says, no matter where we come from. If you've been to prison, you know, if you've never been to prison, you're an alcoholic, go carry the message. Because this is a similarity, you're an alcoholic. And those who have checker past, use that, which will become your greatest asset. You get a chance to reach out to people that the ones who haven't been that road can't reach. But when you guys blend together, you reach everybody. You understand what I'm saying? I think I have I'm almost done, right? Well, in closing, what I'd like to say to you guys is I'd like to say, come as you are, but don't leave the same way you came in. And once we go through these steps right here, all of these steps right here, and we reach step 12, and we read our literature, the big book and the 12 and 12. Once we go through the 12 and 12, there's going to be a paragraph in that chapter. And in that paragraph, it's going to say, it is wonderful to see the eyes of men and women open with wonder, from move from darkness into the light, to see whole lives filled with meaning and purpose, to see whole families reassembled, and to see the alcoholic outcast be returned to his or her community with full citizenship. filled with purpose, families reassembled, and the alcoholic outcast will be received, you know, back into his or her community. Your past will become the greatest asset. Continue to talk yourself into it. If you have a phone, let's use it. If there's a commitment, get it. You know, be active in your own rescue. My name is DJ. I'm an alcoholic. Thank you.